Now I do. 1, 2, 3. All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is Grim's Late Night Open Mic. I'm leaving tomorrow, so I'm doing one, and unfortunately, we didn't get one last week. That's because I had a 28 gig file, which is bigger than most games. So I killed it, and I'll come back to that, because there's still something very important. And maybe, I do have you here, but I wanted to get Hoshioni on because that's something I wanted to talk about with him. But he said he'd be on. If he's on, we'll go into that topic completely later. But let's go ahead and talk about what's important. Right now, we got to talk about Andrew Tate and Greta Thunberg. Yes, I made a very small 11-minute video while I was damn near half asleep. But this is where I'm really going to dig into it. So, for those of you that don't know, Andrew Tate, whether you love him or hate him, he was arrested, originally detained, but now he has a 30-day extension. So he's going to be there for a full month. Prosecutors pushed it. It was updated as of 2:40 p.m. today. So, because I was talking to a guy, and the guy said, no, look at this. I checked a Reuters article. Reuters is straight. I was like, oh, shit. Okay, so they did it. So he's got to sit there. He and his brother both. That's why this is important.
They both got arrested. But go ahead, Graham.
Originally, though, guys, I was saying this is because he poked a bear, Greta Thunberg. And we do have to talk about Thunberg. But I highly, highly doubt. Hold on. There's a little piece of me that doesn't. But for the most part, I doubt that it was related to him basically calling out Greta Thunberg and Greta Thunberg apparently using a old school small PP reference to him. And of course, the pizza box that was apparently so good it was able to bring the Romanian police over to his location and arrest him and his brother. No. Cornering actually clarified that. Basically, what happened was the Romanian police had been watching him for about... Well, they've been watching him for a while, since April. And it was in regards to not just sex trafficking, but money laundering and other criminal things. So, most people are under the assumption, or at least from the information we have, that he is not there for sex trafficking, but he is there for money laundering. Money laundering is a very serious offense no matter where you're at. You can spend a lot of time in jail for that. It is a white-collar crime. But a white-collar prison, I don't think he's going to find one of those in Romania. That's not a good place to go to jail. The situation is this. There is some credence to the fact that he very well might have been sex trafficking a few of these girls. And
yeah, I thought that was the primary reason he was being held.
Because he was investigated for that in August. And somebody swatted him. And this is probably what happened again. But somebody swatted him. And basically what happened was they looked at everything, they checked everything out. There was actually an article done on this, and he was actually on Tucker Carlson talking about it, because I watched that interview. And they didn't find anything. They let him go, it was all good, there was nothing. But he has said several times, and he predicted this, he says, you basically get 3 strikes. I do believe this. I don't think Tate's bullshitting on this. Tate says you get 3 strikes. The first strike, they try to defame you. They try to do something that can defame your position in society. The second strike, they try to put you in jail, prison you, something like that. And the third strike, they kill you. I believe that. I highly believe that. And he's talking about somebody with power, somebody like Kanye West. What did they do to Kanye West when he started doing all the shit? They gave him his first strike. His first strike was to defame
him. Well, I mean, realistically speaking, if you think that isn't how it works, you're fucking insane.
Right. That's how it's not even like...
It is blatantly obvious.
Yeah.
Like, look, I do not like Andrew Tate really at all.
No, I don't either.
I think he's a fraud and a piece of shit and corny as hell. However, that is the gospel truth.
Yeah. I mean,
if you can't tell that's what they do to people, You're living under a rock. Yeah. They've been doing that shit for years and years.
Yeah, well, see, the thing about the quarterings video, he actually started out with a really good... I didn't know this. Now, it didn't take Tate to say something like this, because anybody can and has said it in the Manosphere or whatever. I mean, even, you know, back in the... They basically said, look, he was talking about the fact that, you know, about the Matrix. He was talking about that, yeah, they want you to be slaves, they want you to buy into consumerism, all this kind of stuff, which he does a really bad fucking job trying to defend against, because he is all about consumerism and all that kind of stuff. But he is saying, that, you know, they want you to be a consumer. They want you to just, you know, have kids, get married, and do the thing, work your job, you know. And basically, he said in the Matrix, it was about humans providing warmth. They needed you for your warmth. And he said here, though, they need you for your labor and what skills you can provide. I believe that 100%.
Agreed. That's your proverbial warmth.
Yeah.
Well, and this actually plays into what we were talking about before the show. Mm-hmm. Like the reason I don't like Tate is because he's a total fraudulent grifter, just like Jack Murphy.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other guys who sell you on these courses. The reason this is all such bullshit, the reason this is all so sinister, is specifically because all these courses start off with half-truths, but then all they manifest into is just vagueness and smoke and mirrors, because all they tell you is, like, a couple things here and there that are, like, genuine basic truths, but everything else is a scam and everything else is misdirection to keep you wanting more, to keep you from finding the real truth about your life. It's waking you up just enough to keep you asleep. It's a dream. They're selling you lies.
Yeah.
Because they tell you these half truths, like, hey, you got to go for the thing in life that's important. You got to go out there and seize the day, blah, 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 blah. And then, here, let me teach you how to be a fucking alpha male. It's all horseshit. But it starts out with something that is true.
Oh, yeah.
And because they'll point out things like, society thinks you're disposable, and you need to self-actualize. Because of things like that, they'll convince you of those, and then you'll be like, he's telling me the real truth.
Right.
And then, bam, they got you in the snare.
Yeah.
That's why this is all fuck shit. That's why it's all BS.
Okay.
And that's why I don't like them.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you on that, too. But I do, I mean, again, there is one other thing that we need to talk about with Tate that doesn't occur anywhere else from any other grifter. He's the only grifter that's been able to reach elementary school kids. That's nuts. We had elementary school teachers.
Wait, what?
Yes, third graders. There was an elementary school teacher that was saying that her third grade boys were saying kind of stuff that they got from Tate. And parents are worried that he's radicalizing their kids. And I said in my video, I said, the thing is, Tate is telling them things that they want to hear. And what I mean by that is that they're not defective women, that they're men. He's trying to tell them that kind of thing, and they want to hear more of it. They're like, really? You mean I'm actually valued in society and people give a shit about me? So, I mean, yeah, this is something that they've needed to hear for years. They're probably not hearing from their own fathers and all that kind of thing.
He's saying something that is actually true,
yeah,
but because of everything else,
right,
along with what society wants out of young men, mm-hmm, that it's one of these things where, like, oh, he's making them radical.
Yeah, because there's a lot of, I mean, I was looking at Twitter, and one mother was asking, what do I do? I don't want to take the phone away. because they want to try to bring the kids back. They're like, oh, we got to bring them back to thinking they're defective women again. You know, they want to take the masculinity away. That's what it is. He was probably trying to show them. But that's, again, masculinity is not, it's not a valued trait anymore in society. And we're going to find, it's going to fail because of it. Like, all this shit is going to come to a head because the masculine male is being viewed as defective. And Tate was saying, they fear me because I speak to young military age boys. That's what they, and he's right. I mean, again, yes, he is grifting people. He is doing this $5,000 course, which I think is absolute fucking bullshit, and I do not support.
$5,000? Yes. Jesus, if you spent that much money to be an alpha male, you're a fucking cuck.
Yep. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, you know, but you gotta understand also, there's a caveat. Some of these kids are young. They don't know. They know how to get money. It's actually fairly easy.
That is true.
It's fairly easy for young kids, that's another reason for it being so sinister
because it's like you said, right? A lot of these buyers, if you will, are young, impressionable men who are vulnerable, who are really just lost.
Yeah.
And he's just exploiting them, which is really fucked up.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, right? What happens when you're one of these really young men, right? You don't know shit.
Yeah.
But you do know just enough to realize things are fucked up, but you're lost. You don't know your way. You haven't found somebody who can, you know, give you a little bit of a guiding light to what to do about your situation, how to self-actualize, etc.
Right.
What happens to you when you go down the Tate course path for, say, 5 years, spending thousands and thousands of dollars on this horse shit? And then you realize none of it meant anything. All it did was give you a couple of basic tenets to go by, and the rest you're lost on still. You're broke. You have no money. You still don't know what to do. Now you're in dire straits because you spent all your money for the real answers just to be discarded, just to be lied to, because that's what all this shit is. And now you feel like you're caught between a rock and a hard place. Your time is wasted. You're older, but no farther ahead. And now you don't know what to do to get all this money back, to start making money, to basically recoup your losses.
Right.
I mean, if you don't think that does serious psychological damage to somebody, you're either crazy or you're malicious.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree. I totally agree with what you're saying there. The thing is, like, I don't know, man. These kids, like, they need something. And again, he's called an internet daddy. That's what one of my former writers was telling me. He said these internet daddies always end up the same way. They always end up like he's gonna end up like Jack Murphy. He's gonna end up doing the same thing. He already said that he's okay with his girl having an OnlyFans. He already said that women are the most important thing in a man's life and all men need the love of a woman. There's nothing. I was like, really? When did all this come about?
Oh God!
Yeah, this fucking just started. This happened just.
What an absolute piece of shit. He woke you up just to sell you the lie harder.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, he did. But you gotta understand, it's all about clout chasing for this guy. He was doing the thing with waifu watchers and all that shit. He was trying to appeal to as many fucking different sectors of the manosphere as he could. And
now that brings me to another question I've got. So, everything I've been reading And to be fair, it is somewhat limited because of the time I've had and everything I've been dealing with. For the last couple days has been, it's all sex trafficking. Now, from his side, from what I understand, he's saying, it's not sex trafficking, okay? I got swatted, all
right?
Right, swatted.
But that was his old video. That was the one from August. That's the one I talked
about. Like, everything I can tell, it is sex trafficking, but then there's this intersection with Greta Thunderspurg, and I can't tell what set it off. Like, did he say some mean shit? Like, what happened?
No, he didn't say any mean shit. But, okay, now, hold on. Let me set this whole thing straight, because I basically want to talk about the allegations. The allegations, aside from money laundering, if we're going to talk about the sex trafficking, we need to go ahead and address those properly. Those allegations are simply, these girls, he would basically meet them, and after he would go and meet them, he would basically, they would meet up, and they would become closer, and then he would get them to do the webcam stuff. Now, I don't know if this was forced webcam stuff. I'm not saying he sold them to some psycho. I don't know. I said in my video he might have sold them to some. We don't know. But according to what I've gathered, it has to do with the webcam shit. That he was kind of forcing them to do the sex webcam shit, which they don't even, I don't even think they operate that anymore. That's not even something that the Tate brothers do. Because his brother was behind all that. Where they would basically have some guy, some simp, and make them think that it was a real, you know, oh yeah, this girl really, no. It's just some girl that Tate got. And basically either paid her or forced her to do this shit. Again, I don't know. I don't have any information on this, so. But all I know is that that's more or less what it was, and some women have stated that that could be what it is. And if it is, then he's probably going to go under the jail. There's really not too much you can do about it. I don't know if he's going to be able to get out of this
one. So the allegation is that, like, he forced sexual acts and forced him to record it?
He forced the girl to do sexual acts. He forced the girl to do sexual acts on camera. That's what it seems to be is going on. I don't think there's any forced rape or anything, but it could be construed as, you know, any kind of forced action is, you know, not very dissimilar from rape. So, I guess in that situation, forcing a woman to do a sexual thing against her will.
In other words, is it fair to say that the allegation is, he put them under duress to do these things, but he didn't, like, pin them down or anything?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, the allegation is possible. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that this guy, you know, because there's a lot of conjecture going on here. And I mean, I'm not saying that he is innocent, and I'm not saying that he isn't. You know,
I was just wanting to clear that up, like,
because we don't have enough information.
It would have been a thing of, like,
and
there was coercion there.
Yeah.
Forced camera stuff, humiliation, blackmail kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Opposed to, like, here, let me almost literally rip you a new one violently.
Yeah.
There is a difference. Both are incredibly heinous and shitty, but, like, there is still a distinction that is important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it wasn't like a rape where he's actually raping the people on camera or anything else. Yeah, but he is definitely having them under duress do these things. If that's the case, again, we don't know. And that's why I agree with the quartering, that the only person that needs to decide that is the judge, or the people, rather, is the judge and the jury. That's who needs to decide it. You know, they need to get all the evidence together. And, oh, of course, it's Romania. They can do some shit. But that's his gamble. He was the one that decided to go to Romania and live in Romania. So now he has to deal with the repercussions of their court, which may not be as great as an American court.
Well, they said the law was better there.
I mean, they're, yeah.
Oh, hey, Hoshione, when you pop in? I just did.
But, yeah, that's what's going on as far as that's concerned. Now, the whole thing about Greta, because we've talked enough about him. The whole thing about Greta, and this is where I need to start really talking and pausing this game, because it's good, but it's not what I thought it was. I'll still play it, but it's not. It's grime. Anyway, let me go ahead and actually talk about this, because this is kind of important. Greta Thunberg, or whatever you wanted to call her, Thundersberg, she... Oh, man. There's a guy that did some research on all this shit, and he wrote a small book about it. And... Let's see if I can find it. Well, it's more like a research article. You know, he did a lot of research. And I posted it here, and of course I've got to go find it, but there we go. It is... Oh, we'll talk about that fucker later. Alright. It's coming from the Wiley Online Library, and it's American Journal of Economics and Sociology, Volume 81, Issue 2. It was published in May of 2022, so it's not old. But basically, it says the article examines the continuity of incidents linking Greta Thunberg to an ongoing stream of political shifts. It takes us back to 1992 to her preteen predecessor, Severin Suzuki, and then forward to COVID-19 period and its consequences. The connecting thread that runs from 92 to the present is the use of rhetoric to inspire terror in the population. Terror is used to promote acceptance of censorship and authoritarian restrictions that ironically interfere with the capacity of democracies to solve the problems confronting the world, such as climate change and pandemics. Elite actors create anxiety and terror to retain legitimacy in their control of narratives and that preserve their power. Remember, one more time, elite actors create anxiety and terror to retain legitimacy in their control of narratives that preserve their power. This article shows how the World Economic Forum is transforming the acerbic language of Greta Thunberg into the basis for what is called the Great Reset, a set of policies that will enable the state and select businesses and NGOs to monitor and track the population and eliminate dissent. In short, when children are put in the world spotlight with a message, those who shine the light are the ones preventing real progress and solving problems. So... That was the abstract, but what we really need to get into here is, hold on, just one second. Alright, so first of all right, Thunberg's mother, Melina Ernman, is an opera singer, member of the Royal Swedish Academy of Music. In 2010, she was appointed Royal Court Singer by King Carl the whatever the hell, Gustav of Sweden. And in 2017, she was named the World Wildlife by the World Wildlife Foundation as the Environmental Hero of the Year for Sweden. Her father, Svante Thunberg, is an actor and producer who has small roles on Swedish television. 6 years after receiving the Nobel Prize, Svante August Arrhenius, who I'm assuming is her great-grandfather, became board member for the Swedish Society for Racial Hygiene, formed in 1909, a group focused on researching and promoting the benefits of controlled reproduction in humans. The society sought to popularize eugenics and encourage policy changes to promote racial hygiene. The society hosted public lectures and distributed pro-eugenics pamphlets, but because it was illegal for them to discuss any method of birth control, the group was thought to have limited influence overall. Eugenics theory and practice were common in Scandinavian countries prior to World War II, with Sweden taking a leading position. The Swedish State Institute for Race Biology was founded in 1921, immediately becoming the most important institution for racial science in Sweden. According to Swedish historian Martin Eriksson, a great deal is known about the origins of workings of the SIRB until 1935, when Herman Lundborg, right-wing director of SIRB and champion of its founding, retired. Lundberg was replaced by left-wing anti-fascist Gunnar Dahlberg, and from 1935 to 1960, it continued much as before. So, It also said, beginning in the 1880s with the formation of American institutional history as a distinct branch of study, Johns Hopkins University commenced a decades-long preoccupation with American institutional forms of governance in terms of their Aryan influences. Wow. So there was a lot of eugenic shit going on. And,
So Greta's a little Hitler youth. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, considering all this background, we may now call attention to the fact that Greta says nothing about racial or economic disparities while she casts aspersions on those who have failed to take action.
You know, Hitler was all about the environment too, right?
Greta, I'm not really sure about that. Greta speaks only in the most general terms.
Yeah, Hitler was seriously, like, into vegetarianism and quite a few liberal things.
Yeah. Greta speaks only in the most general terms about those not as lucky as she. In matters of cemented power and capital accumulation processes, Greta is constrained by discursive rules that the powerful have hermetically sealed against further investigation. Yes. That means that she is hiding a lot of things. She is a little Hitler youth. That's definitely what we've got going on. And you know what's so funny? All these woke progressives are buying into her shit. They don't realize she's a little Hitler youth. It's so funny. They've literally got the wool
over their eyes. For every group, they seem to have somewhere where the eugenics is okay as long as it's someone, not them.
Right.
Except for Whitey. Strangely, Whitey is okay with killing themselves.
Right. And, of course, they were trying to do We Don't Have Time. Oh, and carbon pricing. Carbon pricing is... All right.
Oh, boy.
Carbon pricing is so funny.
What the damn hell is carbon pricing?
Well, I'll explain. Carbon pricing offers a significant economic prize for those nations getting an early jump on adoption. The key to the prize is global adoption of energy reform modeling, which is based on the carbon pricing model established by the 2017 High-Level Commission on Carbon Prices. I didn't even know there was one. The primal policy instrument of such modeling is financial auditing metrics that will standardize reporting and data capture. Widespread adoption will help normalize reporting requirements established first as recommended best practices, then incrementally adopted and eventually mandated across the globe. According to Cambridge Economics, the global economic consultancy firm that can develop and owns the trademark, the E3ME model promises integrated treatment of the world's economies, energy systems, emissions, and material demands. This enables E3ME to capture two-way linkages and feedbacks between each of these components. According to NCE, Sweden has led the world in carbon pricing, adopting this modeling in 1991. The price of carbon in Sweden was in 2018 was $150 for a ton of CO2, producing a lucrative venue for investment in carbon offsets markets. So, okay.
Basically, you're monetizing human productivity.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, carbon's just essential to the life cycle. It's one of the most common elements on Earth. But banning oxygen would be too fucking obvious, huh?
Okay, and carbon pricing itself involves rules. Okay, here we go. Listen to this. It involves national rules that impose a price on carbon emissions, combined with subsidies for carbon capture. In some limited contexts, pricing can lead to lower total emissions of CO2. But when questionable carbon capture schemes become involved, the whole system becomes a way for a few companies to profit from the ownership of carbon rights that are based on speculative, keep that in mind, reduction of carbon. They're not sure if it's lessening the amount of carbon, but they speculate that it is, and they can make money off of it. Historically, carbon pricing has led to rules by which companies may reap profits by showing paper transactions that purport to represent the removal of carbon, even when no carbon reduction occurs. It's fucking by-the-books business. It's basically saying, oh, well, these papers and all this research that we paid these people to do, it shows that we've eliminated carbon. So, yeah, we're going to get money off this now. We're going to make money by eliminating people's carbon, by making people do less things. Oh, yeah. What will drive nations to adopt carbon pricing and use that as a rationale for detailed monitoring of every business practice that might be construed as generating emissions? Influence and adoption will be key to these ambitions. This is where We Don't Have Time enters the picture. According to its most recent financial prospectus, We Don't Have Time imagines the TripAdvisor rating system as a template for its own business model. Imagine if all the people who are worried about climate change could join together in a social network focusing on climate action. Such a network would comprise a climate-oriented community that could propose measures, draw public attention to good and bad examples, voice opinions on climate issues, and hold companies, organizations, politicians, and other decision-makers accountable. Just as TripAdvisor's over 450 million users are now a force to be reckoned with in the travel industry, this network would be a powerful force in the transition towards an environmentally sustainable, zero-emission society. This network would also have significant commercial potential due to its role as a digital meeting place for climate-aware and environmentally conscious individuals and organizations. In the case of TripAdvisor, gaming the system can damage the reputation of a hotel chain, causing loss of business. Applying the same methodology to monitoring the environmental behavior of every company in the nation will pave the way to much more pervasive control of small businesses by social media. As its FundedByMe.com page online, We Don't Have Time lists the following as its product use cases. Help platform users find the most climate-friendly choice of products and services. Give users a voice and empower them in ways beyond their voting rights and consumer choices. Offer users the possibility to get good deals on climate-friendly products and services. Encourage corporations to stop using certain packages and production methods. Force them to think smarter and be more brave. Expose cheating and so-called greenwashing. Encourage organizations to disclose their climate impact in a more transparent way. Highlight players who manage to reach ambitious goals as role models. The concept of monitoring and controlling the behavior of others through social media is simply authoritarianism in the guise of environmentalism. We've already begun to see this play out in China. In 2014, 5 years before Greta's breakout performance, the Chinese government released plans for a social credit system, an important component part of the socialist market economy system and social governance system. It aims to reinforce the idea that keeping trust is glorious and breaking trust is disgraceful. The system is based on a complete network covering the credit records of members of society and credit infrastructure with the intention of carrying forward sincerity and traditional values. A good rating could offer priority health care or deposit free renting of public. A good rating could offer priority health care or deposit free renting of public housing, while a negative rating could see individuals banned from flights and trains. While the nominal aim of the system is to improve transparency of state actions for the public, the system justifies the central government imposing control on almost all aspects of citizens' lives. From a recent report in Business Insider, the exact methodology is secret. But examples of infractions include bad driving, smoking in non-smoking zones, buying too many video games, posting fake news online, specifically about terrorist attacks or airport security. We Don't Have Time business plan is based on the consumer plebiscite model of online rating systems like TripAdvisor or Yelp. It claims that it will use that model to establish a consensus system for transparently authenticating environmental action across a vast host of industries, separating the noble and effective initiative from greenwashed hustles and cheats. As such, We Don't Have Time has profiled itself, perhaps deliberately, as the Western counterpart to China's social credit rating system. Where China's model is authoritarian and centralized, We Don't Have Time exposes radical decentralization according to standard rating protocols. But Facebook is a distributed system with enormous potential for centralized control, as is TikTok, as is Instagram, as is pretty much any other. We Don't Have Time is a replica of Facebook, but with an explicit mission. Yet to be determined is how the fallacious rating systems base felicitous Yet to be determined is how the felicitous rating systems, based on likes and dislikes, will index winners and losers. Presumably, it will use the sorts of algorithms that Facebook has mastered. Thus far, we have discovered the puppet masters who transformed Greta from a solo protester in Sweden to a global icon. So, oh yeah, and there's so much more. There's so much more of that's going on here. And of course, they're talking about the Great Reset now. And of course, Davos was ready. They were ready for it when she talked about the Great Reset and eating the bugs. And they said the origins of the Great Reset.
Yeah, Davos, they wanted it to be 2020 originally, but it got put off due to people actually resisting.
Right.
Now it's the 2030 plan.
Here's something interesting. The origins of the Great Reset tie in with WEF's titular head, Klaus Schwab. We know that. Although Schwab has never disavowed the storied origins of the WEF, there is evidence that the idea was incubated by a CIA-funded Harvard program headed by Henry Kissinger. Wow. Then handed off for implementation to John Kenneth Galbraith and Herman Kahn. The idea of a reset appeared in Schwab and Hein, 1971, Schwab and Hein, in which they argued that all modern enterprise must serve all stakeholders, acting as their trustee, charged with achieving the long-term sustained growth and prosperity of the company. This approach was codified as the Davos Manifesto in 1973. The manifesto has undergone multiple iterations since then, but its early versions remain foundational. Closing the 1973 manifesto is this. The management can achieve the above objectives through the economic enterprise for which it is responsible. For this reason, it is important to ensure the long-term existence of this enterprise. The long-term existence cannot be ensured without sufficient profitability. Thus, profitability is a necessary means to enable the management to serve its clients, shareholders, employees, and society. It is odd that the signatories of the manifesto exhibit no awareness that it proposes to replace governments with a network of private monopolies. Look, we're going into, hey, you guys like cyberpunk? You know, where the corpos control everything? That's cyberpunk. That's literally fucking cyberpunk. A network of private...
You mean 80s movies in general? Every 80s dystopian movie for 500 grim?
Yep. With a network of private monopolies, each guaranteed sufficient profitability to operate in perpetuity. We got that. Perpetuity. That's the word. Sorry, my brain
there
is...
There you go.
I've been working. Guaranteed sufficient profitability to operate in perpetuity. Given the difficulty of directing elected governments to preserve the common good, the idea that private corporations will spontaneously consider all relevant stakeholder interests in decision-making is quite astonishing. So, and of course they have, what, Florida's thesis, okay. Richard Florida basically said that great economic collapses always usher in commensurately, these has a lot of really large words, commensurately great resets of policy and cultural adaptations and innovations. At the 2014 meeting of the WEF, Schwab declared, "What we want to do in Davos this year is to push the reset button." This was the same year China announced the launch of its credit rating system. Yep. So, oh man. Okay, and they had something called, what is this?
And why do you think they're trying to get everything back to zero right now? Every financial institution is failing.
Yeah, in 2018, the WEF collaborated
with... They're killing your savings with inflation. They're bankrupting businesses.
Oh, we know about this. Clade X was a simulation of a pandemic. And of course, they were using it. It had a purpose. Dubbed Clade X, this exercise staged the outbreak of a novel strain of the human para-influenza virus. The situation concluded with the dramatic staging of a news report announcing that without effective vaccines, experts tell us that we could eventually see 30 to 40 million deaths in the U.S. and more than 900 million around the world, 12% of the global population. In October of 2019... the WEF again joined with Johns Hopkins, this time including the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. for another pandemic exercise, calling it Event 201. We know about Event 201. Occurring just 2 months before the announced outbreak. 2 months? I didn't know that. Of a novel
coronavirus. What the hell is Event 201?
Event 201 was a pandemic exercise. That was a part, it was basically the WEF joined with John Hopkins, including the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They all got together to create Event 201. It occurred 2 months just before the announced outbreak of a novel coronavirus in Wuhan, China. Event 201 simulated an internal response to the outbreak of just such a virus. In January 2017, 1 year before the 2018 exercise, speaking just days before the inauguration of Donald Trump, Anthony Fauci made the then ominous pronouncement in a speech at the Georgetown University Medical Center. There is no question that there will be a challenge to the coming administration in the arena of infectious diseases. He knew! Rechtenwald sums up the repercussions of the COVID simulation in COVID simulation events. In relation to events that followed, the Clade X and Event 201 simulations anticipated almost every eventuality of the actual COVID crisis, most notably the responses by governments, health agencies, the media, tech companies, and elements of the public. The responses and their effects included worldwide lockdowns, the collapse of businesses and industries, the adoption of biometric surveillance technologies, an emphasis on social media censorship to combat misinformation, in quotation marks, the flooding of social and legacy media with authoritative sources, again in quotation marks, widespread riots mass unemployment. Rechtenwald concludes that that WEF was a partner in planning the pandemic as part of the larger plan to create the conditions for public acceptance of the Great Reset. A major influence behind the debut of the WEF was the Club of Rome, whose 1972 book, The Limits to Growth, issued a grave warning about world consumption patterns and population growth. The club was founded in 68 by Italian industrialist Aurelio. What, it doesn't matter about those people. But this matters. It was basically an industrialist and a chemist during a private meeting at a residence owned by the Rockefeller family in Bellagio, Italy. Man, isn't it weird how all this shit just lines up? You know how they always like to say conspiracy theorists connect dots? But what do you do when all the dots are connected?
Connect themselves.
At the third meeting of the WEF, the Italian guy delivered a speech summarizing the ideas in the book. The club also issued a confidential report by the Messerovic and Pestel, 73, that partitioned the globe into 10 groupings and specified a process for introducing supernatural governance. In 91, the club published the first global revolution, making this assertion. And searching for a common enemy against whom we can unite, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. And their totality and their interactions, these phenomena do constitute a common threat which must be confronted by everyone together. But in designating these dangers as the enemy, we fall into the trap which we have already warned readers about, namely mistaking symptoms for causes. All these dangers are caused by human intervention and natural processes, and it is only through changed attitudes and behavior that they can be overcome. The real enemy, then, is humanity itself. Rather than identifying capitalism as the primary cause of dysfunction, destruction of ecosystems, and the continuous increase in fossil fuel consumption, the authors imply that the average low-income household, humanity, is to blame for our present condition. Thus, the global revolution amounts to a declaration of war on the poor and middle class. This has been the focus of population control theories for over 200 years, ever since Malthus blamed the poor for famines, not the landowners, who limited access to the land by the poor. The 1991 report caught substantial ire. Groups wary of the club's legacy of concerns with population management viewed the report as a doubling down on that commitment. Still, the club's affiliation with the WEF persists, even to this day. At the 2020 meeting, 2020 Davos meeting, guys. The club co-president, Sandrine Dixon Declave, or Declave, she's French, participated in numerous events and introduced the club's planetary emergency plan. It seems that WEF also wishes to declare war on humanity. Yeah. And then Trudeau opened his fucking mouth and said, there's a level of admiration I have for China. Because their basic dictatorship is allowing them to actually turn their economy around on a dime and saying, we need to grow greenest fastest. We need to start, you know, investing in solar. There is a flexibility that I know former conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper must dream about having a dictatorship that he can do everything he wanted. That I find quite interesting. I'll bet you do. Trudeau's invocation in 2022 of his nation's emergency act in response to a mass protest against COVID lockdowns and restriction, a protest noteworthy for its decorum and peacefulness, has renewed interest in his family's long and strong ties to China. I didn't know that. Pierre Trudeau, for example, expressed adulation for Mao Zedong during the Great Leap Forward, an era that cost around 30 million lives. It's only 30 million people, you know. A number that exceeds the Stalinist regime's murderous purges. Justin Trudeau is also an alumnus among over 600 others of the WEF's Young Global Leaders Academy. You can Google that, by the way. The increase in the envy expressed by democratic leaders for the power of authoritarian governments reveals a deep-seated desire by political leaders of all stripes for a level of control that contradicts the principle of citizen sovereignty. Yes! And the United States, both Trump and Biden, have revealed a tendency towards closing off democratic debate by declaring opponents to be purveyors of falsehoods. On February the 7th, 2022, the National Terrorism Advisory System posted the following bulletin. The United States remains in a heightened threat environment, fueled by several factors, including an online environment filled with false or misleading narratives and conspiracy theories and other forms of mis, dis, and malinformation. MDM is what they're calling it, guys. Introduced and are
only
amplified.
Only a theory until it's proven true.
And are amplified by foreign and domestic threat actors. These threat actors seek to exacerbate social friction to sow discord and undermine public trust in government institutions to encourage unrest, which could potentially inspire acts of violence. The announcement designates the proliferation of false or misleading narratives which sow discord, well, we talked about, as the primary factor increasing the volatility, unpredictability, and complexity of the threat environment. Widespread doubt about the severity of COVID-19 and the legitimacy of the 2020 presidential election are given as the prime examples of false and misleading narratives. Of course they are! Yet election fraud throughout U.S. history by both major parties has been well documented. Gumbel, 2005. Electronic voting irregularities constitute only the latest and in some ways most egregious threats to electoral integrity. Voter suppression tactics have also been common. Thus, any effort to shut off investigation...
I mean, you gotta realize that, like, what was the election fraud prior to all this? Does anyone remember being younger and being a certain race between Bush and Gore?
Right.
Where magically in Florida, Bush's brother magically destroyed a bunch of votes in Florida. Swear where it was enough votes that Gore would have won the election.
Oh, I remember
and
that.
And they refused to do it because Bush's brother said, "Oh no, they all disappeared," and people just bought it because they didn't want Gore to be at so literally they committed election fraud.
Wow.
Yep. And it says voter suppression tactics have been common, thus any effort to shut off investigation of and debate about practices that skew election results is an attack on democracy. Efforts by governments, social media, and NGOs to eliminate debate about COVID.
Who should attack democracy? Also, you seen these idiots vote?
Yeah. Also constituted a serious breach of democratic norms. Dissenting views contradicted the authorized narrative about the origins, epidemiology, and proper treatment of SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19. The dissent was based on double-blind scientific studies and clinical evidence accumulated by leading scientists and medical professionals. 2020. In France, the work of renowned virologist Didier Raoult was attacked, and he faced disciplinary action for recommending the use of low-cost generic drugs to treat COVID-19. What they do now... In the United States, The most egregious censorship took the form of silencing Dr. Robert Malone, the research scientist whose work made possible mRNA therapies. Whistleblowers at the major pharmaceutical companies were also restricted in their access to social media. Yep. The attacks on dissenting doctors and scientists. They're always like, trust the science, but they attack the scientists. It's so funny, right? Began...
Science
is the most anti-science statement ever.
Yep.
Real science is questioning everything.
Yes. After a sizable consensus emerged around the effectiveness
Look,
of offering...
you need to stop rebelling against the science, all right? I'm the science. If you keep on doing that, I'm going to get you George, and I'm going to feed him to fire ants.
Right, right. Effectiveness of
Don't
off-label...
make me feed your pets to the fire ants. I am the science.
Oh, man. The attacks on dissenting doctors and scientists began after a sizable consensus emerged around the effectiveness of off-label medicinal treatments. From that point onward, the voices of critics were deplatformed from social media venues. We all know this. We were there. The obvious motive for all of this was the desire of pharmaceutical interests to sustain their monopoly. Yep. In defining appropriate remedies not only for COVID-19, but for all illnesses. Unlike dictatorships, democracies require a process for designating emergencies in order to authorize state agents to carry out by force or decree measures that otherwise they are forbidden to do. Findings of fact must be established, and some measure of consent by elective representatives, such as authorization, is required for issuing executive orders. In 92, a 12-year-old heralded an emergency for which debate was considered by many to be nonsensical. The emergency was, for her and many others, self-evident. In 2012, the U.S. Congress passed the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, removing all meaningful restrictions on domestic broadcasts of government-produced programming. This gave the U.S. State Department and Broadcasting Board of Governors enormous power to anonymously disseminate their programming within the United States.
When was this?
2012?
Yeah, you all know what's crazy about that?
Hmm.
So, during that time, Twitch had a promotion to save the PBS Broadcasting Network because they were cutting funding for the Broadcasting Network. And then, during Trump cut funding for the public broadcasting by a lot.
Remember that!
So, do you want to know what made them get donations? They showed every episode of Mr. Rogers. Because Trump was trying to just cut information for public broadcasting. Gee, I wonder why he was trying to cut it.
In 2019, another youth issued a kindred plea on the same stage as her predecessor. In each instance, a clear generational divide was proclaimed. In each instance, the spectacle was clear. Adults were to be blamed, shunned, and paradoxically stunned into submission and action. For how is anyone to gainsay such plaintive and young voices? Right. Sandwiched between these episodes, the U.S. government loosened restrictions that had previously curbed the use of state propaganda. The power of the state could now be used to propagate an emergency by flooding social media and other venues on the internet with a single narrative. Within the COVID crisis, the cellular level of life is now forefront in global consciousness as another realm of precariousness. It is another dominion into which state authority must be interposed on all acclaimed grounds of the anticipatory security of all, a global ecosystem for the greater good. Pressed by system logic to its imminent telos, such an ecosystem must extend to all life precincts, from demos to bios, retinal scans, total grid surveillance, subcutaneous digital identity chips, vaccinations, and green passports, the instruments at the forefront of emerging state control of all biological aspects of human action. All press state authority even deeper and irrevocably beneath the will of the people. These intrusive measures undermine the legacy of basic human rights that form the foundation of most democracies in the world. Such authority is now ushered in as a seamless response to an always incipient emergency or system exigency. Some of these words are... When such an emergency is questioned, that dissent becomes just another risk to manage. As Foucault, Lyman, I've never heard of that word before. Management and control now come to us via a closely meshed grid of material coercions rather than the physical existence of a sovereign. Conclusion. There is no question that human activities have created threat on a new scale. The threat of possibly catastrophic climate change and the threat of a global pandemic as deadly as the 1918 flu. The existence of such threats does not, however, mean that the optimal response is to increase the powers of government to limit dissent and control the behavior of citizens. A basic premise of democracy is that knowledge is to be distributed broadly throughout the population, and that institutions need to be designed to promote diverse responses to a crisis in order to determine which ones are most effective. Top-down methods of control that are managed by experts are not only damaging to democracy, but they are also less effective than more open systems of public debate. Since 92, young activists have been put in front of a world audience to activate public acceptance of policies that displace democratic processes with authoritarian actions. Although Greta Thunberg claims to speak solely on behalf of science, her political position is far from neutral. By calling upon leaders, not publics, to take charge and fix a broken system, she's effectively calling for more state control in response to a climate emergency. That is precisely what the dark forces who launched Greta to stardom want the public to hear. Yet, if we leave the response to climate change in the hands of the elites, we will continue to get rhetoric without action, the very condition she decrees. The period from 2020 to 22 has been a replay of the politics of elitism in relation to another global crisis, the COVID pandemic. As a result, the pattern of surveillance, management, and control of private behavior is now becoming clearer. For example, Gavi CEO Seth Berkley, 2017, announced the necessity and an imminent emergence of a global digital identification grid devoted to the monitoring of the poorest and those most vulnerable to pestilence and disease. Look at that. Gavi is part of the Consortium Alliance, ID 2020, which also includes, because of course, the Rockefeller Foundation and Microsoft. The group's manifesto opens. Alliance partners share the belief that identity is a human right and that individuals must have ownership over their own identity. As Berkeley emphasizes, many relevant technologies are largely in place already. That's their justification. Big data, for example, can help public health officials to anticipate the spread of disease and hone vaccination campaigns. Geospatial mapping and drones are already being used in Nigeria to identify communities that have not received polio vaccines. And in Rwanda to deliver blood needed for transfusions for mothers who hemorrhage after giving birth. The concept of ownership in this context is noteworthy, since it is the inverse of the usual meaning. Hence, it means that having an identity will allow others to own you. The existing use of electronic identity as the basis of surveillance in Africa provides evidence that states and large NGOs are gaining the power to monitor and control our lives. We are now witnessing a symbiotic convergence between pandemic abatement, vaccines, and digital ID. Bill Gates has been instrumental in kickstarting and funding research into digital certificates for vaccination, a policy he has been espousing since 2021. Certificates of vaccination status may very well be utilized for broader, more integrated biometric ID in the near future. This upgrade in state monitoring of individual health practices is taken up in a July 2020 briefing paper issued by the World Economic Forum. Recent technological advancements have ushered in a new era of the Internet of Bodies. What the fuck is the Internet of Bodies? With an unprecedented number of connected devices and sensors being affixed to or even implanted and ingested. Oh! I see! No, I'm going to tell you what the Internet of Bodies is. Okay. For all you guys that want to go into the Matrix, you're going to hate this. The Internet of Bodies basically refers to, and I will repeat this, an unprecedented number of connected devices and sensors being affixed or even implanted and ingested into the human body. The IOB, Internet of Bodies, generates tremendous amounts of biometric and human behavioral data. This is, in turn, fueling the transformation of health research and industry, as well as other aspects of social life, such as the adoption of IOB in work settings, or the provision of new options for entertainment. You can have the porn in your head. What about having the hentai in your head, Grim? No! No, but there's nothing like it. I don't know. I don't the internet of
The most I would do is wearables.
Right.
Because then I can at least take it off.
Or the provision of new options for entertainment, all with remarkable data-driven innovations and social benefits. While recognizing that this development raises new challenges for data governance that concern not only individual privacy and autonomy, the briefing paper makes clear that IOB will deliver inestimable benefits for the very reason that it coordinates with state surveillance of individual health. Drawing from the work of author Patrick Zilberman in Historical Epidemiology, which is reviewed in Keck, Italian political theorist Giorgio Agamben blogged at the beginning of the COVID-19 quarantines. An issue is nothing less than the creation of a sort of health terror as an instrument for governing what are called worst-case scenarios. It is according to this logic of the worst that already in 2005, the World Health Organization, remember this? Announced 2 to 150 million deaths from bird flu. Remember that? And swine flu. Y'all remember that, guys?
I remember swine flu. Wait, you know what? Swine flu felt like the boogaloo on a lesser scale.
Right.
As 2020.
Yeah. Suggesting a political strategy that states were not ready to accept at the time. Zilberman shows that the apparatus being suggested was articulated in 3 points. Number one, the construction on the basis of a possible risk of a fictitious scenario in which data are presented in such a way as to promote behaviors that allow for governing an extreme situation. Number two, the adoption of the logic of the worst as a regime of political rationality. That's what they did. They used the worst case scenario. Three, the total organization of the body of citizens in a way that strengthens maximum adherence to institutions of government, producing a sort of superlative, I know the word superlative, I just can't talk right now, good censorship in which imposed obligations are presented as evidence of altruism and the citizen no longer has a right to health. But becomes becomes juridically obliged to health. 7 years after publishing The Plague, Camus authored The Rebel, an essay on man in revolt. In these essays, the great writer of existential democratic dread glimpsed what Giorgio Agamben and many others have observed. For example, Browdy and Arakaki offer a scholarly but frightening assessment of elite, technocratic-driven influence of global electronic media. These critics now understand that a global, epochal transformation is underway into a world governed according to the logic of a closely meshed grid. And Camus warned us of the consequences of following that path. Irrational terror transforms men into objects. Planetary bacilli. According to Hitler's formula, it proposes the destruction not only of the individual, but of the universal possibilities of the individual, of reflection, solidarity, and the urge to absolute love. We were warned in 1991. It says Camus, 1947. So again, he's basically saying that terror transforms men into objects, just like in Hitler's formula, and it proposes the destruction not only of the individual, but the possibilities of the individual. Of reflection, something we do a lot here, solidarity, and the urge to absolute love. That's hardcore. Was such terror what Justin Trudeau had in mind in February 2022, or when his cohort and of WEF alumni have had in mind with lockdowns and censorship from New Zealand to Austria? To raise questions publicly about the potentially authoritarian motives of public figures amounts to interference and speculation. Those questions are now classified as dangerous speech, even in the United States. Was Camus prescient or impertinent? Now is the time for those with tenure privileges to start asking. That's the end. So, what have we garnered? We've garnered that this whole thing is eventually put chips in the people. It's basically, oh, cool, we're going to give you all this cool shit. But we're going to monitor you. We're going to censor you. We're going to make it so you can't say this, can't do this. It's not going to be a very cool thing. And I was kind of warned on this. Because you know how I get into, oh yeah, but the waifu thing will be great, you know. And yeah, but if I have a device on my head, fine. In my head, I don't know about that. I really don't know. That's just a little
I just want open indie source revolution.
Yeah, I know. And hopefully that'll happen. Hopefully that will happen. But, yeah, that's what we're getting into, guys. That's literally what all this fucking boils down to. So, all this
And
you know what? And let's think about something.
At this point, repetitions in the Bible is just a spoiler alert for what these fuckers want to do.
Oh, yeah, guess what?
That shit sounds great.
Let's look at this. What if Tate is just fucking controlled opposition? What if Tate, all this shit he's talking about, leave the Matrix and all that, is controlled opposition? What if he's all just controlled opposition? And this whole thing has been a big fucking psyop. Because when the Romanian police arrested him, he said, the Matrix has got me. He said, they've got me. That's literally what he said on camera. Like, while they were arresting him, yeah, that's what he said. You can actually, there's a video that I posted of it. Sky News had the video. And that's literally what he said. He said, the Matrix has got me. And I'm like, damn, that's absolutely crazy. Yeah, he says, the Matrix has attacked me. That's what he said. And remember, him and his brother both. So, I don't know. It could all just be a fucking big gay-op. It could all be a gay-op. But now that you're
going to be everyone's a fucking Matrix fan, and they just
he's talking all about the Matrix.
I'm gonna do some gallows humor now to cope with the fact that I'm getting
right. So let's go ahead and talk about something else since you're both here. I had deleted it, so I might as well go back to it. We got to talk about something that came up last week. All the way last week. And I kind of want, like, Whip, are you here?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Hoshione, you're here? Okay.
Hoshione?
Yeah. Okay, this involves TFM, and I got to talk about it, because this was the old video, and it was a good video. I had a lot that I said. And it's good that you're here, because you can actually hear it from somebody that spent 5 years hanging out with TFM and his server, talking with him all the time, all that kind of stuff. And what you're basically getting of TFM is not how he is. First of all, one thing that you said, Hoshione, was that he was talking about Nazis with FUMOs. First of all, we got to keep in mind, TFM, he is an old military guy. He likes a lot of this kind of humor. And I don't think he was legitimately, like, I've known this guy.
That was a whataboutism statement. It's like, well, why is everyone shitting on me for the sex doll when people are perfectly fine with Nazis having FUMOs? It was a whataboutism statement, which pisses
and
me off.
I didn't even know that, like, and this is the
thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, basically the whole tweet, like, thing was, how come people give me shit for having sex doll, but these Nazis over here can have their FUMOs? It's like, these are two different worlds, monkey.
Now,
you have a hunk of plastic, you fuck. That's a little hard for people to wrap their heads around. Versus a 20-centimeter plush doll that people take pictures with their Instagram
People take
it's
pictures.
It's a little different, monkey.
I don't know about that.
I understand TFA also takes the pictures.
I do too.
But most people who have FUMOs have them to just take pictures and make meme videos.
That's true.
Like you.
When you buy a sex doll, it is expected you're fucking hurt.
Here's what I have to say. This is what I was going to say. And Tack, you were here to hear it. We need to stop, mm-hmm. as men, giving a shit if people have opinions that we like, people we like, have opinions that we don't like. People, like this is what I'm saying, because I like TFM. I like his content. I do not agree with everything TFM says. I do not agree with every opinion he has. We have disagreed on many things. TFM is not a conspiracy guy. He does not believe in conspiracies and people in the smoky room. He doesn't believe in any of that kind of stuff.
Oh, he's turning around on that. But,
he might be turning around on it a little bit. But when I knew him, TFM wasn't talking. He didn't want to hear about conspiracy. Matter of fact, you could get booted out if you started talking too much conspiracy. And me and him, we had to basically agree to disagree on many things. But I totally respect the guy and his content. And I'm not going to... And again, like, we got to talk about everybody. There's so many YouTubers out there. Not even YouTubers, just content creators in general. I agree with this, but I don't agree with that. Like, some person will say, well, you need to do this. It's like, well, I like what you say here, but I don't like what you say there. Or they have one video where I completely... Yeah, you're dead on, man. But on this one, I don't know what the fuck you were thinking, you know. And everybody is entitled... Go ahead.
The bigger problem isn't necessarily that I disagree with him on his take on the Fumos versus sex dolls as a guy who wants both. The problem is he's just lashing out at people who shouldn't even be his enemies for I don't even know why. It's like, why are you making enemies out of people who should potentially be your fucking allies?
Well, I will tell you. Right. I will tell you why. Because first of all right, TFM is kind of bitter about what happened. And let's be honest here, TFM, I've talked about this many times. TFM, yeah, he did the TWR thing. He was really popular for that. But that wasn't the only thing that he was, that wasn't really the reason why he was mainly thrown out. A lot of people think it's that, but it's not necessarily that. TFM was thrown out because he was a political debater. He would debate politics with people. He would have people come in the call-in shows. People with very radical beliefs. I'm talking about actual white nationalists would come in to debate. Mm. And let me tell you why that was an issue. You might not like the white nationalists. You're like, oh yeah, well he's totally roasting them. Mm. He did roast them. However, the problem that YouTube had is that by giving them the ability to call in, he inadvertently gave them a platform. Even though he wasn't intending on it, and he was intending to roast them, he gave people with this ideology a platform. And to YouTube, they believe that people may listen, and they may agree with some of the things that these white nationalists say, even if TFM is roasting them. They may still agree, and they may still be recruited to that level of
radicalism. Oh no, not people... Not people deciding to think for themselves and choose the wrong decision.
That's, and remember, we just talked about this.
I didn't know it was illegal to be wrong.
We just talked about this.
I've got several felonies in my math classes if this is the case.
like I said, though, we have to keep in mind what we just talked about, that social media is trying to censor people's opinions and control people's thoughts. That's what Camus was talking about. Camus was fucking on point. He was a chat about this shit. Like, he was telling us straight up, like, look, the government is going to try to control you with all these little technological gadgets that you so love. And they've already tried to do it. There's already so many people on Facebook or whatever that are just into this shit. Like this guy today I was talking with. I was observing the conversation. Basically, the girl, she is an OnlyFans girl. I don't know. You know how you're friends with women and then they just change over the years? Well, she's one that changed over the years.
Oh, you mean like people in general? Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I'm just saying that she's all OnlyFans, and I didn't realize she had her OnlyFans tag in her, like, profile. Like, it's literally right there.
Oh!
Yeah, and I was like, oh, okay. But basically, the guy says,
God, Grim, remember back in the day you would have killed to, like, see your high school crushes or whatever's tits were fucking $5?
Yeah, now it's...
Good point.
Yeah.
Another monkey paw moment comes to life.
But here's the thing.
No kidding.
This guy, he looks fairly older. But basically, they were saying that... She was posting that a rich man or a man with money doesn't mind paying $200 for dinner. Or paying half the rent. And I was like... And I said, no. I said, men with money actually do care because they like to have money. They don't want to splurge their money. The reason why they have money is because they don't spend it on every damn thing. They're not buying $200 dinners.
Yeah, $200 a dinner is going to be really fucking expensive.
Now, this guy... By the way, he's this Florida dude. He's posting all these fast cars. He made sure he's got a nice fancy watch in his picture. You know, he's basically showing off who he is. And if you go to his profile, which I actually checked out, it's full of sports cars. It's all sports cars. That's his thing. He's all, and he says, I understand the sentiment. A $200 dinner is really not that terrible, especially down here in South Florida. But if I'm going to invest my time, money, I need them to match my level of ambition in life and not settle for stagnation. Because if my partner becomes stagnant in life, it only brings down my level of motivation. Now, that's not too bad of a statement. I'm very glad that my girlfriend takes her career serious and has more than doubled her income since we started dating. Because that amount of ambition fuels me to further myself as well. But he said it's not about the money that's important, but the drive to constantly improve. Having a partner to uplift and motivate has been so invaluable to both of us, and both of us value that more than any monetary success. However, he posts a picture. But that being said, I'm more than happy to spoil my partner because her smile is worth more than $3,000 to me.
He was like, here, hold my soy latte. I'm going to simp harder.
And there's a picture of her. And I was looking. I was curious. I was like, okay, so who's his partner? You know, what kind of career does she have? It doesn't show. Like, she doesn't even have social media. But from what I'm seeing, it looks like there's a very good chance that she's doing the sex work too. So, he's one of these guys. And, of course, the sex worker, the one that's talking, she says, I love to see that drip. And she looks so happy. That's what they're saying. Yeah. Yeah. And, of course, you know, she's all goth. It's like these goth girls they're like hood goth girls now. Like, I'm serious. They look like goth girls, but they talk like German shepherds. It's literally happened. We're there. Just to face it. There's goth
German. Yeah, it's just going to be a fucking point where everything's just an amalgamation, like Final Fantasy.
Yes.
Final Fantasy fashion sense is going to be the norm real soon.
And Drexel even commented. He's like, the fuck? He's like, yeah. I'm more than happy to spoil my partner because her smile is worth more than $3,000 to me. Oh my god. And I was looking at the guy. Oh, and I'm looking at the guy. This dude, he's your regular dude. He's taller than she is, but he's literally ordinary guy. The only reason a woman like that is interested in him because she knows he has money. That's it. He's kind of a big guy. Like, I looked at some pictures of them all together. He's just your regular, you look at him, you're like, man, what does she see in him? I know what she sees in him. His wallet.
Bank statement.
Wallet. Yeah. He's like, oh, he spoils me so much. Mm. Oh, that's it. He's like, oh, I don't mind spoiling you.
And again, that bank, the bank and the money isn't even him. That's just his shit. There's a difference. It's just she found someone willing to give it up for her.
Yeah. Yeah, and you could tell this guy's an older dude, and he found this chick, and it's like, dude, South Florida, isn't that Miami?
I believe so.
Oh my God!
It's Florida.
This guy,
Miami.
Is,
I think I think Orlando's more central.
This guy is so fucked. He just doesn't realize it. When the money runs out and he can no longer provide, that smile is going.
Oh, he's done.
He's done.
Money runs out. If his income even dips, say because I don't know, recession or something.
Yeah.
He's gonna fucking bail trying to
Oh, you mean, right, recession. You mean that thing we're actually in right now?
But he has to sell his car.
Nah, don't reach for that misinformation on that Discord, yo.
Huh?
You tell me with all we're in a recession. I'm like, no, that's misinformation. Don't you know?
Oh, yeah. And he sells his... Hey. When he has to sell his car and, what happened to your nice sports car? Well, I don't have any more money. I gotta go find a. I gotta go find a Chad or Tyrone as quick as I can.
And once you go to that death spiral of selling off all your possessions, it's just over.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like selling off your shit's a one-time thing. It doesn't get you out of a hole.
Yeah.
Depending on what you sell, it even puts you deeper into the hole. I know one of my bosses at the flea market was about to sell his fucking business trailer because he needed out of a jam. Thank God he found a way out of it quickly enough, but God damn. It's like, you need that. That's like being a fucking professional alcoholic and deciding you've got to sell your kidneys to pay your bills. I don't know.
Well, no. Wouldn't liver make more sense? Because, you know.
Right.
Kidney, liver, it all filters out shit. We have...
Yeah, but alcohol is what affects...
Many most of those organs are filtration. It'll fuck it up, too. But anyways, okay, fine. Athlete sells a lung.
There you go. That's a better. That's a better analogy.
I mean, there'd be a lot of professional alcohols. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
If that was a thing. Then Irish would be the richest country on earth.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm seeing though. That's the crap I'm seeing from these guys, and I'm just like, oh man, you don't even realize what's gonna happen to you. Like, I told these guys today at work, or yesterday at work, I told them, I said, look, man, a lot of women I have been with, you know, they're like, oh, I'm the best, they'll say, oh, I'm the best, you've never had pussy like mine and all this shit, and then they just lay there and do nothing. And I said to them, I want to return, it's like, if I want something done, I'm going to pay a professional. I said, when you're going to go get some kind of computer or you're going to get a game, you want the best. You don't want just anything, right? You want a good service. You want a good product. And he's like, well, that's the same way I feel about that. I'm going to get a professional. And he's like, well, yeah, but that professional went with a lot of people. I said, yeah, but it's a professional. It's like, dude, you get with like these virgin girls that don't really know how to do anything. I mean, I'm talking about a professional here. If you're just for that, if you're going to go in a relationship, it might be a little different. But if you're just trying to get the job done, you got to go with a professional. That's what I'm going to say on that. And the guys are like, man, yeah, they're like, you're speaking the truth. He's like, I can't believe you said that, but you are speaking the truth, man. Two black dudes I was talking to, they was just like, damn, he said, this guy going off out here. I said, why do you think people listen to me on my show? I was like...
And no, what's funny is that women actually will treat your fucking sex like it's a professional thing. And if you don't provide them the sex, the money, and the provision, they leave in your ass.
Yeah, you're done.
Oh, yeah.
You gotta have all three to be the man. And even if she found this theoretical man who can fight,
yeah,
fucking buy her way out of problems, he'd still think there's a bigger, better,
right,
dude somewhere else.
Yeah, what are they always looking for? Bigger, better deal.
Oh, yeah, the bigger,
it's
better deal.
It's almost like they aren't worth it or something.
Nope.
Mm.
I'd say so.
It's almost as if we needed checks and balances where there was a reason women wasn't shit.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I talked to a bunch of female friends.
Actually, marriage and relationships helped everyone out. I don't understand Drex's whole thing about that, but monogamy actually helps both parties because both parties do get jealous.
But what
it's not that he's against monogamy, it's that
he doesn't believe it's natural. He just doesn't believe it's natural.
Well, I mean, it isn't.
No, it is.
Well,
do you want it?
But hear me out. Hear me out. So, it is simultaneously natural and unnatural. What do I mean by that? Well, if you're taught monogamy from a young age, of course that's natural.
Right.
For instance, I naturally lean towards monogamy because I was raised Christian.
Right, absolutely.
That being said, if I wasn't, I might not necessarily hold that position without it being taught. Now, at the same time, Drex has got a really good point in that there are a lot of people who push it so heavily because they don't have options. And he's not wrong.
Yeah, he's not wrong about that.
Now, here's my thing. I'm not saying that it's unnatural as some way to justify cheating on a partner or some fuck shit like that. But he does have a point when it's like, hey, like, a lot of people will push this shit because they don't have options, as well as try and lock you down. And his biggest point, and I agree with this honestly, is, okay, it's not fair to lock me down into monogamy and then you not be willing to meet my sexual needs because we're supposed to be in a relationship, but you don't want to do certain parts of what makes that relationship work.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, the reason monogamy is fair is when everybody's getting their needs met. But if you're not willing to do that for me as my partner, how is it fair for you to force that on me? Because now I can't get my needs met, but if I step outside the relationship for that purpose, now I'm suddenly the bad guy, even though you refused me.
Well, part of what men think when they get the relationship, they wanted that, I feel, they wanted to think that the woman actually wants to fuck them for them.
I agree with that.
And the problem is they learn very soon that it's like, no, she's not impressed with your 5-inch hard cock.
Right.
That's very true.
And like, whoops. Turns out, she has dildos as big as your forearm.
Yeah.
You ain't shit.
Yeah, that's true.
I will say that they do like it. They do like it when it... Now, I will say something. I will say something, because I've talked to a few women. Women are like, yeah, I like it, but I don't like that much. There's so many women that have admitted to me. It's like, you know what? The whole big dick thing, even women have said, it's nice to look at, but I don't want that in me. Literally have said, that's too much. I have literally had more
like
than
can't,
enough women.
They can't take it?
No, they can't take it. More women than you. More women than you think can't actually take it.
No, it's like
and
those,
I actually talked to
like
an Asian woman.
Mongos,
an Asian woman was
where,
like, there was an Asian woman I was talking to recently, and she said, oh no, I don't like big dicks at all. I was like, that's way too much for me. I mean, I've been turned away several times. Because it's just,
wow.
They can't take it. I mean, it's all about the girth. They can't take it. And I had one girl that said, I love that Grim
just humble bragged about his dick.
I had literally one woman that said to me, I'm too big, I cannot relate.
Yeah.
I had one woman that I knew. We could do Goldilocks to the Thought Steen Bears.
Where it's like, this dick is too small, this dick is too big, Grim, you just make enough money for any ladies watching.
Now, I will say one thing. No, I've talked about it before in videos. But no, what I was saying, though, but listen to this. There's a woman I knew for a very long time. And, yeah, we start talking about it, exchanging pictures and stuff like that. And she's like, okay, first of all, you're about the size of my largest dildo. And I'm going to tell you something about my largest dildo. I can't put that thing in automatically. I actually have to be warmed up before I can use that thing because it's just that. It'll hurt me. It'll physically fucking hurt me. So, I was like, what? Right. Yeah, so... I didn't know all this shit till I started talking to women. When you have more than what normal, I guess what they're normally used to, that's when they start like, okay, hold on. That's good, but I don't know. Some women will be like, hell yeah. Why do you think there's one woman that's been in contact with me for so long? Not going to name names here, but she gave me a call today.
Can we switch bodies, Grim?
She gave me a call today. She gave me a call today. It's like, oh yeah, she was basically gonna come over and meet me or see me because I ain't seen her in a long time, because she was going to pick up her kids with that new guy that she's with, and I was like, oh, you want to come visit me and all that? She's like, oh yeah, definitely want to come see you and all that. I was like, well, you know, I'm out of town though. Normally I would have said, yeah, fine, cool. I would have took some pictures or whatever, show you guys, hey, this is Empress. And then after that, but no, I can't because I'm going to be out of town. I said, well, I'll be out of town till Tuesday. So if she can't, I don't know what time they were coming back or whatever like that. Because she said, well, maybe we'll try to catch you on the way back. So I don't know. But I said, well, we can always try it again another time. But she did want to come see me. She still wants to do a love line thing where people call in and we're supposed to talk about their relationship. I don't know. It's something. It's whatever. I'm like, look, I'm up for anything. If she want, whatever she wants to do, I don't give a shit.
Grim will be the first caller. Oh yeah, my dick's too big. God, that is a hilarious parody ever.
Because I'm like, dude, I can't even get fucking
screaming. Where, like, you call in on a show, Grim, and you complain about your dick being too big, and then everyone's just in disbelief.
Shit. Yeah. I mean, it is.
The skit writes itself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool. I had problems with... Man, when I was on the damn porn site years ago, I had problems because there was so many... look, I'm going to tell you guys one thing. This is one thing I said in my old videos because I was discovering it. If you ever want to do... Now, in some rare occasions, you'll get women. But most porn that men do will attract other men. I'm just telling you right now. Don't think you're going to be a big porn star and attract all these women. You're not. You're going to find men and trans women. And trans women are men. So that's basically what you're going to get. Now, they were very nice. I didn't do anything. I just told them, I said, look, I'm not interested. But, I mean, I didn't want to be mean to them. I mean, they were saying nice things. I'm like, I'm not going to fuck. Somebody gives me a compliment. I don't care. I'm like, okay, yeah. I said, you know, that's really good, but you know, I'm not interested, but thanks for the compliment. I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me know
I'm packing, but I'm good, fam.
I did have some, I did have one porn star in particular follow me. His name is Johnny Blaster. So, and yeah, he's legit. That was his legit page. He was following me. There was also some girls that did like a podcast and they are all about feet. They basically did their podcast while they would show their feet.
Don't tell Drex that.
I forgot all about it. It's been a couple things.
Grim has a gift for the feet heritage.
They found me. Like, my profile picture was literally what I was packing. And you know what was crazy? There were women that would say in their profiles, if your picture on this website is just your dick, I'm not going to add you as a friend. But guess who always got added as a friend?
You?
Me! I always got added. I'm like,
I guess.
Man, I had this guy that wanted me to bank. Like, I wasn't even sure if she was legal. Like, it's a foreign country. It's like some 19-year-old, maybe. Maybe some 19-year-old thing. I don't know what was going on with her. But
19 legal.
I don't know. It's a foreign country. It was an Arabic country. So I don't know. But I was like, yeah, you know, no thanks. He's like, sure, he has some pictures of her. And I was like, no. I mean, I said, thank you so much, but I'm just not interested.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I had so many. I could have been a bull and did what Drexel did. Because I actually had invitations to do that shit. I had cucks invite me. Oh yeah. I've told Drex about this. I've had cucks invite me, so I know what that's like. I never did it, but I know what they want, and they'd say some crazy shit. I was like, no, I don't want to do that. Like, are you sure? Like, it's like, will you please bang my wife? I'm like, no. I don't really.
I'm gonna put my cock and ball blender. Thank you.
Like, I really don't want to.
Have a good day. Over there.
Yeah, I did all that kind of stuff, and everybody's like, oh, you know, you should have done Pornhub or OnlyFans, and there's no doubt in my mind that if I started doing an account like that, that I would be doing pretty well. I'd be paid. And that's always been the last-ditch effort.
Because you have enough
if
women shipping for you.
If shit gets bad enough, you know. But I don't know. Right now, I mean, because I do have a gift, I guess I could say. I do have a gift, so, I mean, if people like me that much. By the way, just pointing it out.
Grim just needs to be the bull.
When I did this shit, I had 2.5 thousand subscribers and 5,000 views on my profile. So, yeah, people were checking it out. Yeah, people were interesting. People were interested.
Well, Grim, if you get in the porn scene, you need to be the bull of the NTR scenarios.
Yeah.
Fuck other people's wives while their husband.
Yeah, that's what they wanted.
Then record your film. You get a chick to film, or you get a chick to fuck, and a cameraman.
Yeah.
And with every stunt, it's perfect.
Yeah. This
bonus points if you can make him cry while you're fucking her.